So, hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to the International Tennis Hall of Fame in Newport. We are on Saturday morning, the morning of the enshrinement ceremony for the class of 2024, and I am very honored to have with me three existing Hall of Famers, Kim Clijsters, Tracy Austin, and Stan Smith. There's nobody here to applaud. It's just good morning, you guys. How's everything? Here. We'll all applaud each other.
These ladies.
Thank you. So listen, it's you guys have been Hall of Famers for a long time, but this weekend, certainly from my perspective, never gets any less exciting. And as we sit up here on the balcony of the court tennis building, you ever forget how beautiful this place is, Tracy? I mean, it is a breathtaking. Forget about all the history that's enclosed within these walls. Is this not one of the most beautiful tennis settings on the planet?
It is. It really is. Especially for our country, when we come on the heels of Wimbledon, where there is so much beauty and history there. So then the next week to come to the Hall of Fame, where I believe the first tournament was in 1881, we have that gorgeous horseshoe piazza, beautiful court over there, and it's so green. I think anytime you're going to play on grass courts, there's that extra beauty. But you can't pass up the history also. That museum, the Hall of Fame, has done a wonderful job in updating it.
We had a great start to the weekend last night with the courting fashion event at Rosecliff Mansion. Stan, I love what you've done with your summer cottage. It's really quite lovely over there.
Well, you know, I thought it'd be a nice place for the, you know, the guest here to visit, and so I let them use it for last night, and it's a little tough to upkeep is a little bit.
Well, it should be no problem heavy for how many shoes he sells.
But mowing the lawn must take forever, Stan.
Yeah, you know, but it's fun. It's exercise to get out there to mow the lawn, and of course, this is lawn here, so there's a lot of lawn involved here in this Newport area.
You were telling us before we started, reminding us of some of the history of this place, and that as we look back at the museum and the cupola there and the clock that's on the facade, that back when you started, the players would come play in the tournament and sleep on army cots up there?
I played when I was, 18. And we played this event in the upper floor. It was like a dormitory. They just had cots there, and so all the players slept there. And actually, Lutz and I were put into a private home just two blocks away.
And everybody else had to sleep in a cot? The beds?
No, well, it wasn't a nice bed. It was the Gallaghers. They're a nice couple from Newport that let us stay in their house.
Well, rattle off some of the names who would have been in that dormitory with you.
Well, we had Emerson and Stolle, and I don't know if Labor was here the first time, Newcomb and Roach, and Lutz and I, and I think Arthur and Cliff Drysdale, some of the guys, you know, that were playing the tournament. You know, we played this tournament. Jimmy Van Island was a crazy professor, and he's the one that started the tiebreaker, and it all started right here. And we had to play, like, serve a yard behind the baseline. That was an experiment. We played where you played ping pong, five serves. We played where you had to let the return bounce before you could rally, so it took out the serve and volley.
And, for the whole set or just the tiebreak?
The match. Playing the match that way. I mean, he experimented with different types, and, of course, the players hated it. You know, to have to do something different. And then this whole tiebreaker, the sudden death was the ultimate. In fact, when I won the U.S. Open, it was a 9-point tiebreaker. Oh, wow. And in fact, we had to play the doubles match, the doubles final after I won the singles. We got into the fifth set. It was getting dark on a Wednesday, the third week. We just played. We got together, and we said, okay, we're going to split the prize money, which is about $300. And we're going to play for the title in a 9-point tiebreaker.
That was the whole match?
For the title.
And what was
two
the score?
Sets all.
What was the score in the tiebreaker?
Well, Eric Van Dale and I was 3-all, which meant we had a little bit of a break because we're serving.
Three last serves.
And we had the three last serves. Eric missed the first serve, and Newcomb ran around and hit a forehand at his feet. Eric couldn't handle it. And then Eric missed his first serve. Roger Taylor ran around, hit a forehand at his feet,
poor
and Newcomb
Eric
poached, and the match was over.
Stan, Eric, really, we get from that is Eric missed his first serve a lot.
It was. It's a shame how your memory has slipped, Stan. It's
well,
really
I'm getting fun a little old, Cybers.
I can tell.
I can't tell you who won the match, but I think we lost the last point.
Kim, I know you don't like it when I refer to you as Madam President. Of course, Stan was your immediate predecessor.
I was Madam President.
You were not Madam President. There's a lot going on right now in your administration at this Hall of Fame. We've got the announcement this week of the new revamped Hall of Fame Open starting next year. We've got the renovation about to happen on the museum. We've got a new reimagined enshrinement ceremony starting next. Tell us everything that's happening that's new at the Hall of Fame.
Well, a lot of things that you mentioned. I think one of the big things that I am involved is the program Be Legendary. That's going to be a really, really exciting project to work on worldwide. Not just, we have here in Newport, we have Team Fame, where we help kids develop and have, you know, all the great things that tennis can bring. And you don't have to be a professional tennis player to get a lot of benefits from tennis, right? You learn discipline from a young age, etiquette, behavior, how to deal, you know, with losses, making mistakes, and how to overcome those. So there's so many great values to teach, and you know what the Tennis Hall of Fame, you know, they want to inspire, and there's no better way to inspire than to start at the younger generation. So the Beach Legendary program is a huge thing. The tennis tournament next year, they're changing the date of the enshrinement weekend. It's going to be the week before the US Open. So a lot of changes, and exciting to see Dan and Patrick, you know, step up and involving, you know, from their past, kind of the network that they've built through tennis and through life, and involving a lot of those people. And it's been an incredible learning experience for me, meeting so many great people, and at the same time, you know, seeing my idols, you know, come together here and support each other. And it's really, really amazing. And it feels like a family. And I never thought, you know, when you stop playing tennis professionally, that you would be a part of kind of that family kind of atmosphere, and with all these people that you traveled with on tour, but then also, yeah, like I said, the people that I used to watch on TV when they were playing or commentating and listen to. And so it's a very cool experience to be a part of, and to try and make a big change, to make a little change from my end as well.
It's so interesting to hear Kim say that, Tracy, because when we do our speech to the new enshrinees, we always say, this is your new home away from home, and we encourage you to come back as often as you like. We'll always, clearly Kim feels that. Do you feel, and you come back fairly often, do you feel that sense of kinship with your fellow Hall of Famers, that it is not only an elite club, which it surely is, but also a family?
Absolutely. We felt that last night. It was another beautiful dinner with really champions, Hall of Famers from all generations. And I think we really have a connection, because all of us, with whatever age we started, we had that long journey of going after our dreams, of really accomplishing our goals. There's that kinship. And I also get excited when I see the three on stage last night, because in the next 24 hours, they're gonna be feeling a lot of emotions. Mm. And I think I'm always surprised, not surprised, but just how wonderful it is when they get inducted. I remember Leighton Hewitt a couple of years ago. He's done everything in the game, but he was really overwhelmed emotionally. And I think people, when they're playing the game, we're not really thinking about becoming Hall of Famers. We're thinking about winning tournaments, improving the day-to-day process. But at the end of the day, it's pretty cool to be kind of anointed and being able to join this club and feel that connection, have fun with each other, see each other a few times a year. And I'm also excited, just to wrap that up, is that next year they're going to have that event, the second week of Wimbledon, the women, which they haven't had here at the Hall of Fame in 36 years.
Yep.
So yes, this event goes away, the men's event at the 250 level, but they're bringing back a men's event at the 125 level, a women's event at the 125 level, so combined. And I think it's great that it's the second week of Wimbledon, because that transition for the players is going to be easier. And then it'll be a nice, clean transition as soon as Wimbledon's over to the hard
court. I can tell you that this idea, now that so many of the 1,000 events are two-week events, this notion of putting challengers in the second week of these two-week events for all the players that lost in the first three rounds, they do it at Indian Wells, the one in Phoenix, they do it in Miami, I forget where they play it, they do it in Madrid, they do it in Rome. The fields on these 125 events are deeper and with higher ranking cutoffs then a lot of the 250 events we see, Stan. This is going to be a high-level event when it gets here.
You know, the players that are playing here now and played here the last few years that love this place, there's only 32 players left, or maybe even 16 at Wimbledon, and 128 players, both the men and women,
right,
are going to be available.
Yep.
And so it's going to be, I think it's going to be a strong draw. People want it, that like to play on the grass. And it's not just a grass court game now. These courts are so good that players are able to stay back, rally, just like they do at Wimbledon. In my day, and when we were playing here at on the grass, it was terrible, to be quite honest.
You served in volley because, God forbid, you'd let the ball bounce. Who knew what was going to happen?
Don't want to let the ball bounce. And so, now you can stay back. And so players of all styles can compete. It's not just serving volleys. Like, Cressy's the only guy in the world, I think, that serves in volleys. And so now you've got a lot of players that are in the mix. And the women, I think, are going to appreciate it. As Tracy said, 36 years ago, there were women playing here, but since then, it's been a men's affair. So it's pretty neat, I think. I agree with it. It's pretty neat to see what's happening.
The other thing I think people sometimes overlook, especially people who haven't been here, is that this place is an amazing town to come to in the summer. The atmosphere here, I think, is unlike almost any other tennis tournament I've ever been to. The way the players walk from the hotel to the courts, the way you'll see them down in the harbor, Kim, having dinner, and everyone, it seems to put everybody in such a good mood. Fans are able to, at the coffee shop in the morning, the access to the players is so intimate and special. At least it strikes me. I'd come to Newport in the summer if there was no tennis event here. To have tennis here in concert with all the other things is very special.
It is great, and like Tracy just said before, when you come from Wimbledon, it's not just you have the feels on the court, but I feel also the Wimbledon Village, there's a similar vibe, right? Like I grab my tennis bag and I go from the place that we rent out and you walk to the courts and it's kind of that same feel as well. And people are very excited to have tennis in town and they talk about it and they're very, especially here in America, a lot of people fly over to watch the event and to combine it with the Hall of Fame and walk through the museum. So it's definitely, an amazing week, but very comparable to the way that it feels when you walk around Wimbledon Village as well.
Let's talk a little bit about this incoming class. Last night at Rosecliff was such a magical way to start everything. And I think fans got a flavor for it. Now, Richard Evans is a master storyteller and journalist and author. And Stan, I know he contributed to your book, but the charisma on Vijay and Leander is quite something, isn't it? Those two, start with just your experience with Vijay, Stan, knowing him and what a Pied Piper for the sport he was.
Vijay was a character. He and Anand, they were really a pair, and Vijay was, did a little bit better than Anand.
Anand's his younger brother.
And Anand's his older brother.
His older brother,
actually,
okay.
Yeah. So we played him in doubles. In fact, my last match at Wimbledon, we played, Nastasi and I played Anand and Vijay. Ooh. In doubles in the 45 and overs or the 95 and overs, whatever you were. But, so I've known Vijay. In fact, we played two doubles tournaments, and we won them. And he was such a great doubles player, but he also played great singles. And so he was very close to getting into the Hall of Fame on his tennis record. But he's done so much in India.
Tracy, remembrances of Vijay?
I'm going to say playing at Wimbledon. That's where I remember Vijay playing so well. And just his game, I was a little girl playing Wimbledon for the first time and seeing how smooth he hit the ball. I mean, there was just an elegance about his game. He had this kind of quick serve like this.
And he was better.
He'd just come in and hit these gorgeous volleys. Just so many check marks about what Vijay did as a commentator, as an innovator, as a promoter. Bring tennis to
as a James Bond character.
As a James Bond character, I forgot about that one.
And so humanitarian.
The humanitarian charity work, but bringing and as Vijay spoke last night, first he spoke eloquently, and then he was hysterical. But
yes.
It was very funny. But for Leander and Vijay to bring tennis to what did they say 1.4 billion people? That's so important to have that whole part of the world understand what you can do. And then for Leander, I mean, he was just funny. He was classic last night. I mean, he again has that flair, right? How many times has he won the mixed doubles with Martina Hingis? I remember seeing them play at Wimbledon in the final, and I think they lost one game in the final.
18 major titles for Leander between mixed and men's doubles. And Martina is going to present him for induction because I think it wasn't her last slam. I think she won her last slam with Bob Bryan.
Yeah. I think it's in Australia.
Yeah, they won together. That's going to be very special to see Martina up there again to present Leander.
It is very special. And even yesterday when Chrissy got the Learning Center named after her and just to see Martina, kind of do a little introduction and talk about her friend. And that's the beautiful part about it. I mean, it's, you know, you've had these amazing rivalries, but there's not a lot of people in the world who understand what you've gone through. And so to see those kind of friendships and to see the connections that you build, that goes so much deeper than what tennis was at the time, right? Like, it carries on through life and when you're going through your struggles, and it's you can
like our car ride this morning.
right but it's true.
I don't even want to ask now.
You're talking about family, and I mean we're both in tears by the end. You know, I mean, because she's so right that there's not that many that know exactly what you feel, whether it's on the court or our travel schedules now, whatever. It's pretty cool to be able to connect.
I see it, Tracy. People obviously think of Martina and Chris in a similar breath because of their rivalry, I think 60 matches, but I put you in that conversation with the two of them. You're the one that ended Chrissy's epic clay court streak and had so many matches with her. You said something operative just now, which is that there are only a handful of people in the world who know what it's like to walk in your shoes, to live that life, to feel the feelings that you felt. And I love it when I see it with Martina and Chris, and with you and Chris, and you and Martina obviously work together at Tennis Channel. But the fact that you were such sharp rivals on the court, but have this clearly genuine affection for one another and deep appreciation for your time together, it does my heart warm every time I see you guys together. It must do your heart extremely warm.
I love it. And last night, before the big party, there was a cocktail party, and talking to Chris for 40 minutes with my husband and actually John Lloyd. Ex-husband. I mean, we were having a ball. We
were
laughing.
That's a family.
Yeah, we were having such a good time. But there is that connection. There's that understanding. I think there's that trust. And then to sit, we watched you present with Chris on my left and Martina on my right, and we're kind of snickering, we're talking about stories, we're kind of laughing, we're enjoying each other. But you're exactly right. And what's wonderful, I don't know about for you, but I feel zero of that rivalry. Yeah. Absolutely zero. Yeah. I mean, that is so far gone. I'm so appreciative. Fortunate to have had that. Now I'm just using their intelligence and their smart, their wit to kind of enjoy our relationship together moving forward. At the drop of a hat, I could call either one of them, trust them for advice, and I'd have their back and they'd have mine. And obviously what they've gone through the last few years, you just feel a stronger depth.
Do you feel that way as well, Kim? Do the rivalries peel away as time goes on, and do you feel an appreciation for women that you competed against and feel this commonality that only you and a handful of others can share?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's something that I personally first realized when I started going, you know, kind of to the school gates with Jada and dropping her off and talking to a lot of the other mothers. And, you know, they talk about like, oh yeah, I'm having a reunion with my school, 10-year, you know, whatever it was. And talk about the experiences that I've had. And it's hard for people to understand what we've gone through and the commitments that we've had to make from a very young age already, that the family's made. So there's not a lot of people that understand that. And you know, we've traveled the world since we're 11, 12 years old. And you know, for me, I was around Justine when like her mom just passed away. So you build connections with people from a young age, and it's, I get like chills thinking about it. Like it goes so much deeper than, you know, the rivalries, the wins, the losses. And like Tracy said, like you forget about all that stuff. You're just so excited that you were able to, like for Justine and myself, to make a change in Belgium, to become a role model for young girls and boys, to bring like put tennis on a pedestal for many years. And to be able to have had that kind of impact together is something that will forever kind of connect us.
It's funny. It was during your induction that it struck me that this common bond, even for people who come from what seem on the outside to be such different origin stories. You went in with Andy Roddick, and when I was getting ready for that enshrinement ceremony, I said to myself, well, gee, what might they have in common? Young girl from Belgium, brash young fella from Nebraska. And then, of course, you guys did have this really deep connection from having been juniors together.
Yeah, and under 14s already it started, right? So we, like, it's funny, like, you live these lives where, you know, you know each other, but you don't know each other really well. You kind of go to, like, a players' party together. You dance, and then you go off to the next thing. And then at different stages, you see each other kind of develop and you know, win his first Grand Slam. And you feel, like, a connection to, like, oh, my God, that's so great that he gets to be, you know, the number one American player now, and everything that comes with him, him meeting Brooklyn and having kids. And it starts with that connection that you build at 14 years old. So, and for us to be here together and being inducted together was really, really cool. And it was very,
go ahead. Last week I did an event for Stan, and I did it with Andre Agassi, because he has an events side as well. And so Andre and I were there with just 14 women at a table discussing. It was just really casual, kind of like this. And it was supposed to go 2 hours. We were still there at 11:15. I mean, it was so cool. And Andre's actually asking me questions. And then what did you feel like? What are your parents, you know, what were they like? And then I was asking him questions. And just, I think we were learning from each other as those other 14 people were kind of just there. It was pretty darn special, and it was pretty honest and pretty open. So those are the kind of things, like you said, there's not that many people in the world that have been, it's not cocky, but have have been through that same kind of situation and that same journey.
Well, think about, after tonight, there'll be 269 Hall of Famers, and mostly players, some contributors, but they're arguably the best players who've ever played the game.
Yep.
As Tracy said, you try to win majors, and Davis Cup, Fed Cup, and that sort of thing, Billie Jean Cup, and that's sort of what you're looking at. But ultimately, this is the ultimate prize, to be one of the greatest players of all time. And even I, sometimes, and especially when I see these inductions, you think, gee, I'm really in a special club here.
Yep.
We're just talking about all these players have gone through similar experiences to get here, and so it's always special to be here. And as I was when I was president, I always made that observation that the great players, all the great players, arguably, are here. They're part of the club.
I want to make sure that I touch on Richard Evans, because it's important that he not be overlooked, having not played. But you're the right person to ask, Stan. He contributed to the I'm More Than a Shoe book. Share with those who don't know his work, might not be familiar with just how intrinsic a contributor to the sport and the narrative of the sport he's been over the last half century.
Well, it's been almost a half century, and he actually was with us when Arthur and I went to Africa. And he and Bud Collins and Frank DeFore were with us. And so I got to spend time with him then and appreciate, you know, his thoughts, not only in tennis, but on world affairs. And so he's been, along with three or four others, probably the biggest historian of tennis over the years. And he obviously has a background of what's taken place with all the great players over the years. And so he's a perfect guy to be here in the International Tennis Hall of Fame, because he's helped celebrate all the others that are here. So it's great that we do have contributors as well as players that are in the Hall of Fame, and he certainly deserves that place. And he's written 23 books, and mine was one of the minor ones, but it's crazy how much he knows about the game, how much he knows about the history of what's taking place with all these great players.
Tracy, have you guys been through the museum lately? Have you seen your old dresses, Tracy?
I have. I went 2 days ago. I did an event over
did
there.
Did you have pigtails to go through there?
Don't ruin my hair.
such a cute little, what's the name of that dress? A pinafore?
It's a pinafore.
Yeah, okay.
A tiny little thing. So yes, I think that anybody out there would thoroughly, if you love tennis, because there's the Raducanu outfit, there's shoes, there's, you know, Boris's outfit. I mean, there's just so many different outfits, iconic outfits, the Borg, and the stories as well. They've done a fabulous job in really updating it, that you can call lines. It's just interactive, and you just learn so much about the Hall of Famers.
Do you remember when Chris Clouser and I dragged your dress out of the museum and made you put it on center court?
I do, which was very unfair, because...
Oh, how so?
Because I had an outfit already on, and so then I had to put that dress over. On from when I was 14 over a dress already. I was like, I hope
And
I
it was
fit
still
through.
Loose, Tracy.
I was just sweating. Out on center court, maybe we put that dress on again.
That's ultimate pressure.
Ultimate pressure?
Yeah.
To try to get through the armhole. But it was pretty funny. I hope they washed it, because I did play the rest of the exhibition in it. So I hope they washed it before they
you
put
did.
It back
I,
in.
I think it's against hall policy to wash any of the memories out of the outfits. So it's in there as it was. So just some final thoughts before we go, because we've got the Brooks Brothers breakfast coming up. And I'll ask each of you in order just to recall the memory of your enshrinement day, because we're getting ready for that occasion for VJ and Leander and Richard. And I've heard people say it's a little bit like a wedding. It goes by in a blur and it's hard to get specific memories. Kim, what's your prevailing memory of that day with your family and with everyone here?
I think one of the biggest memories was even before the day was when I told my family in Belgium about being going to be inducted. And it was so different to, you know, my in-laws. They're American, we live in New Jersey. And just seeing the contrast of both, you know, families' reaction was incredible.
Because halls of fame are not so much a thing in Europe as they are here.
No, like, you know, I've been traveling the world and I've been in the States a lot and I love watching other sports and I've listened to the announcers announce somebody as a future Hall of Famer or a Hall of Famer. So I've learned to kind of listen to that and think that was the pinnacle of a career. And but just to see the difference of like my family that was like, all right, congrats, you know, like you've retired, like it's done. But then seeing the reaction of everybody, but then to come here and experience it and sharing all these memories. And for me, walking through the museum and seeing, you know, my memorabilia next to Steffi Graf and Monica Seles. And it was very surreal. I think the comparison to a wedding is very similar. But again, I think in a sense, maybe even deeper, because your whole life, the movie of like when you first held a tennis racket, the impacts, the struggles, I think that all kind of, you relive it all through those couple of days that you're here. And so it's exciting now, you know, as a kind of bystander to see other people experience that. That's the most beautiful part about it, I think, is to see them have that moment and to listen to their speech and share that, you know, share that all with their family.
Tracy, you were very young when you went, youngest ever to go into the Hall of Fame.
What are
you?
Sweet.
I know. And it's funny, they talked to me yesterday about, should we take that part of Tracy's introduction out?
I think so. It's not something I love.
No, but
because that means it ended too quick.
We know.
Yeah.
But you still accomplished so much
time. No, it doesn't take away, but it's kind of like announcing, but whatever.
So what are your memories of your day?
Emotional. I remember Don Budge actually brought me in, and I don't know why, but it was pretty cool. He's the first player to ever win the Calendar Grand Slam. And just to have him and so many champions that were here, my family was obviously here. But I think it's the culmination. It's like a rubber stamp that you've had a very successful career and the culmination of our sport. So like Kim said, you're reliving everything that you did. I would have never dreamed as a little girl. Yes, you can have dreams of that, but I would have never dreamed that they all came true, really, to be number one and Fed Cup three times and winning majors. There's so many little girls, even from our own club, that were going after the same thing. So I feel very fortunate. Yes, it was a lot of work. Successful career ended sooner than I wanted to, but at the end of the day, to be in there with the other past champions, that I was a ball girl for some of them, and to dream that one day I would be part of this whole team and part of this Hall of Fame family, because I do feel like it is a family, was extremely amazing and emotional. I see my speech now, even last night they showed a little bit of it. I could see I was just on the edge of losing because it is highly moving event, and it's very, very special to look back.
Stan, why don't you put a bow on this, your memories of the day and any advice you might have for Lee and VJ and Richard on their special day?
Well, I went in with a class which was pretty exceptional. Dennis Ralston, Southern California guy, Alex Olmedo from Peru, who spent his life in Southern California, Billie Jean King, who I think some people realize one of the great players of all time, and then a guy named Bjorn Borg.
All in one year?
And so it was I felt like I was sort of the, you know, the B-part player in this whole thing, because in fact, Bjorn didn't come. He came the next year. He couldn't make it for some reason. And Billie Jean came in on a helicopter. And so
as you do.
It was, you know, it was, I felt very privileged because I didn't think I was an automatic. I only won a few tournaments, but it was a special moment to be on the court with that group. And in fact, I still, right at my desk at home, have a photograph of the four of us. Bjorn wasn't here, but again, realizing I was now considered one of the greatest players of all time. And so that is an emotional moment and a significant moment, and one that you, as you said, you don't really think about it as you're playing and all your goals.
So my getaway question is this, and this has been my biggest curiosity since the class was announced. The acceptance speeches are supposed to go 7 minutes maximum. Tracy. Listen to me. There's no editing. This goes unedited. They wanted a raw conversation on the morning of the enshrinement, and this is what we're giving them.
Edit the snort out, okay?
I think it's endearing. I think the America just found out that Tracy Austin snorts when she laughs really hard, and I think that makes them love you even more.
Oh, okay, here we go.
So the enshrinement speeches are supposed to go 7 minutes maximum. Stan, what is the over-under on VJ and or Leander's speech? Give me a number.
Well, using a meter of McEnroe and
Mary Pierce,
I mean, that'll be, we're not sure how that's going to match over and above in that situation, but that will be the test.
I need a number, Stan. Give me a number.
45 minutes.
Just one.
That's just VJ.
Depends upon whether you let VJ talk or not.
Do they have lights out there?
I believe the word is loquacious, and it applies.
Do they have lights?
No.
That's what I want to know.
I believe we have lights this year.
I've heard there are a couple of speakers. They had to get everybody to get their iPhone out and turn the lights on, turn the flashlight on.
Well, we learned to have lights the Mary Pierce year. With that, we wouldn't make that mistake twice. Give me a number on Leander. Give me a number on VJ, Tracy.
I think they're going to be very disciplined. I think they're not going to be over 12 minutes.
Okay, Kim, you want to have the final word here? Because you've got, as the president, you've got the power to cut them off.
She's got the hook.
I didn't use the hook, which I should have, but...
Yeah, that was your fault, actually.
No, it's right behind. I could have done it.
But. You had the hook.
All right, Kim.
I'm going to say something. I think Richard's going to have the longest.
Get out of here.
Speech.
Oh,
there we
upset.
Go.
That would be a major upset.
Yeah, that would be...
And I look forward to it.
What do you think, though? What number?
I think he's going to go 11.
11? Oh, my gosh.
And you
such
and they're gonna issue. And that's going to be the longest.
I think this is a sacred occasion for these three people, and we'll leave it to their best judgment of knowing when to... And we don't have a band to play them off like the Oscars, so it is what it is.
Kim's gonna start singing.
No, yeah.
Let me just say
then they'll definitely turn it off.
I don't know how you feel at home having watched this podcast. I've certainly been much more entertained than I anticipated for a Saturday morning here in Newport. Allow me, please, to thank our guests, Stan Smith, Tracy Austin, and Kim Clijsters. And remember to join us if you're not here in Newport at 6 p.m. Eastern for the enshrinement ceremony of the class of 2024. We'll get our answers then. And thank you, Kim, to you and your staff for everything you do at the Hall of Fame, for preserving and promoting the legends of our game, the history of our game. If you've never been here to Newport to the Hall of Fame, please make it a bucket list stop if you're a tennis fan, which we know that you are. Thanks so much for joining us, and we'll see you tonight at the ceremony.